You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. Come get some. See where
I live. IGN GameScoop.
Are we ready?
I believe we are as ready as we're ever going to be.
As ready as I'm going to be.
Yeah. Let's scoop.
Let's scoop indeed.
Let's scoop it up.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN GameScoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis,
scoop.
Jared Petty,
scoop.
Vince Ingenito.
Scoop.
We got a great show for you this week. Last week, we were coming to you from Germany. We're back here in our office in San Francisco now, home from Gamescom, which was a pretty good show this year, I think. Lots to talk about. We're going to talk about the PS4 Slim and Neo. Lots of information leaking ahead of Sony's September 7th. Meeting conference that they scheduled.
And I didn't even remember, I'll save it. We'll get in.
We'll get to there. We gotta talk about the Super Nintendo, which turns 25 this week.
Wow. So it can rent a car now.
It can.
Without any exorbitant surcharges.
Exactly.
But first, Deus Ex Mankind Divided.
Yes, that's a video game.
It's out now.
Sure is.
Vince reviewed it, liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm. I liked it a fair bit. I gave it a 9.2. I think that mechanically, it's the best Deus Ex. I think pretty much inarguably
the best Deus Ex. Inarguably, no one can argue with that.
I don't mechanically. If you're gonna come at it from a gameplay angle and like from a level and mission design angle, no. Like it's not really.
What's so much better? What makes the mechanics work so much better this time?
So I think the environment design is probably the most impressive thing about it. Like obviously, Deus Ex has always been about choice and consequence, being able to approach things in a wide variety of different ways. But I think that what's special about Mankind Divided is that they've super broken free of the dichotomy of like, well, are you going to play stealthy or are you going to play not so stealthy? It's like, even if you don't want to be seen, even if you want to lay low, any given play space still has like six or seven. It's not like here's the quiet route and then, or you just run out in the middle of everybody and just shoot and hope for the best. Like the play spaces are not designed that way anymore. Now it's kind of like, here's a jungle gym, and depending on what boxes you've ticked in terms of your character build, these three options will be open, those four options will be open. This is like gonna give you a high vantage point, this will give you a low one. This is gonna make use of your Icarus dash and your Icarus landing system. This one over here is gonna force you to use your glass shield stealth ability a little bit.
I mean, it seems to, like, I really, really liked Human Revolution. It was one of my favorite games from last generation, but there's no denying that the choices in that games were kind of false choices. It's like, well, here's a terminal you can hack, here's a vent you can crawl through, but the vent's behind a vending machine.
Right.
Or you can shoot that dude. Like those, you could do A, B, or C, whereas Mankind Divided seems to be sort of truly open. Like it's just an open 3D space where you can sort of go at it in whatever way you want.
Yeah, and what's amazing is that like there's even a lot of different options if you don't have like there's it's crafty how many different ways there are to deal with any given situation. Mm. So like Damon was just playing a little bit.
That's me.
That guy. He was just playing a bit this morning right next to, at the desk right next to me, and I was watching him play
at work.
And he was playing through an area that I played as part of a preview a few weeks before the game came out. And it's very early on in the game. You're making your way to meet someone. I don't need to say any more than that. You're going to meet somebody, but the place where they're at, the building they're in, is kind of under siege by some organized crime thugs. So even just to get there, even to get to the scene of that area, you have to go through this kind of bogus police checkpoint, mm-hmm. or do you? I watch Damon do the hard part, do the hard thing, which is you get to this checkpoint, to get by the checkpoint, you can do a whole long, fully fleshed out side mission that in and of itself has like five or six different solutions. And then once he finished that, then he was able to just go to where he needed to go, and then began like another 40 minutes of infiltrating, of watching patrol routes and trying to not be seen and slowly, methodically making his way through the hallways, knocking guys out so that he wouldn't raise an alarm. It all together probably took him, I'd say, like an hour and a half or something, hour.
Better part of the morning, probably.
Yeah, a good solid part of the morning. Then, just for effect, and this is not because Damon wasn't good at the game, he played very well, just for effect, I loaded up the very same area with the very same augments and went from that checkpoint that's blocked to the person he wanted to meet in about 5 minutes.
Did you just shoot everybody?
I didn't. There weren't any enemies left. Actually, that's right. In my particular one, there weren't any enemies left because I had already done it.
He did take a very direct route.
But it was the very same. I mean, I wouldn't have changed a single thing if there were guards there.
So
it would have been
the
same.
Did you just go over everybody?
Yeah, it's like going over walls and rooftops.
There was a series of going of extra jumps to make and keypads to hack and a window, a ceiling window that you could like drop down through, and then a few different vents that wouldn't be accessible normally. Yeah. So it's like, I did the same thing in 5 minutes.
What's cool is that this is like the first area in the game. There's like a tutorial mission that's very straightforward, and right. then it drops you into your first area where it's open. And right as you are given control of the game, you're given your first objective. And then I was like, okay, this is what I'm gonna do first. But it's kind of far away and it's hidden behind some locked area. So it's like right off the bat, it's very wide open. You can go anywhere. You're getting distracted by side missions or shops.
So the game is teaching you to poke your nose everywhere all the time.
Yeah.
and rewarding you for that.
Yeah.
And Mankind Divided is a little bit of, instead of a two, like, you know, Human Revolution had two and a half hub areas, and this game has just one giant one,
correct.
Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or, and mine is just necessarily giant geographically, but just giant in choice and option and
way more dense than any of the hub areas in Human Revolution. I mean,
it's kind of an interesting trade-off to have. You know, it's really just one space, but it's a lot more rich with opportunity and choice.
Oh yeah. I mean, like, and what's amazing is the amount of stuff that's in there and the kinds of different things that are there. So yeah, there's side missions, and the side missions Mankind Divided, they're like as meaty or even meatier in some cases than the main missions. They're these multi-part, long-form quests, often that run concurrent with like ongoing events in the story. Like there are side quests you can start early in the game, but that you won't be able to complete until midway through.
How does the game feel like if you wanted to play it like an action game? Like if you just want to run and gun and not even really play it much like an RPG.
It actually feels great, assuming A, you're skilled, B, you have the right augmentations. Mm-hmm, you know, sure. You can, if you want to play that way, they've actually added a lot of augs that make that route a lot more fun and a lot more viable.
That was one of their big goals, was to make combat not feel like a failure for, you failed at stealth.
Right,
so now
right.
you have to go through this combat.
No, absolutely. Like for instance, one of the new augs is the nano blade launcher. So, you know, Jensen has those like long, you know, Assassin's Creed-esque nanoblades in his arms, but this is an aug that allows you to launch one of those from afar.
Do you have to go collect it afterwards?
No, you don't.
You gotta go put it back in my arm.
You actually, it'd be funny if you could, but you actually can't, and that's kind of the trade-off of those, is that like they're silent, they don't make any noise, okay, so it's great. They've got good range, they pierce through armor just as well as they pierce through flesh, so even if it's a seriously, you know, heavy-duty, dude, like that, they're dead. Like you hit them with it, they're dead, and it's quiet. It'll even pin their corpse to a wall. So, like, if you really get sneaky with it, you don't want someone else who's patrolling to see the corpse. If you time a good shot, you can just nail someone to a wall so they never fall over. But like the trade-off is that that ammo is extraordinarily rare.
I think I want to, I probably won't be able to bring myself to do it on my first playthrough, but I want to play, everyone does a no-kill run through these games. I'm going to do a kill everyone.
Right? No, you shouldn't. Yeah. It's a lot of fun, especially
not even
no survivors.
Good right. guys, bad guys. If it moves, hello, sir, I need your help.
Yes, I have a problem. I seem to have this nanoblade, and it's really cold. Can you warm it up for me?
But just the fact that you can play with the game that way, that's so wonderful that they open that world up for you. It's, I think about these games, and Deus Ex is an amazing series that exists at this kind of wonderful nexus. I don't know if it reminds me of Metal Gear Solid 5 or Metal Gear Solid 5 reminds me of it. It, sure. it doesn't have that vast openness, because it's all about finding different solutions, different things. But it's so weird to think about the fact that this, you know, you go all the way back. This was kind of a weird offshoot of Daikatana, the fact that, that this started. So, well,
you know. Tell us about this. But I guess I just realized the series is not quite as old as I thought it was. The first Deus Ex was 2000.
2000, correct. Yeah. Yeah.
In my mind, it was like early 90s PC game.
No, it was a PC game. But this was something that came out of when Ion Storm was formed after John Romero left id. They were going to build this giant super studio to produce the best games ever. Daikatana was their flagship.
He was going to make us his bitch.
Yeah. He was indeed. Suck it down was the tagline. They had contractual obligations, if I'm remembering the story correctly, to create other games. And so in addition to the big skyscraper top studio that ended up being a total meltdown, literally and figuratively, they also built a peripheral studio.
That burned down?
No, they put it on the top of a skyscraper with huge skylights above, and it became so hot inside between the PCs and that the working environment was oppressive, and they had to like hang fabric from the ceiling to try to block the sun so they could see their monitors. It was 90 degrees up there, and people, it was just awful. It was, everything about the Ion Storm story is incredible. What could have become one of the great publishing houses and development studios absolutely melted down in a series of bad decisions and bad luck. It's a really cool story. But out of that debacle, a small side studio or small side development team was formed in a separate, unpretentious office over in the corner and pretty much left alone because the Ion Storm guys were so busy with all the drama going on around Daikatana. And meanwhile, over here, they're just like, well, they don't really care what we do. Let's just make this game I've always wanted to make.
Meanwhile,
Deus Ex.
Yep.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Warren Spector and Harvey Smith were off making magic.
Doing brilliant things with a very small team and almost no interference from the accounts.
Well, and you can see, the Harvey Smith is obviously still doing, Dishonored and a lot of the Lifeblood. You know, it's a very different looking and feeling game, but, the family tree of video games can be traced straight back to
Deus Ex, Dishonored.
Deus Ex.
Yeah. Deus Ex, Dishonored.
What about Warren Spector, though?
He can be traced to Mickey Mouse.
Epic Mickey.
I was gonna say he's taken a little bit different path.
Sure, he has, but Smith is
a sequel to that, right?
Yeah.
What was that called? Epic Mickey 2?
Epic Mickey 2. The Power of Two, I think, was the subtitle.
It's amazing because the Shock games, the Dishonored games, now Prey, and Deus Ex all have this common DNA that starts there. Mm-hmm.
Well, it started as this very nerdy sort of hardcore thing, and now it's just seeped its way into, everyone wants choice in their games more agency and freedom.
I love these games, and they're exactly what I like to do in video games, but I never played the first two because I wasn't a PC gamer, so it's just really cool that now you can play PC games on consoles.
The original Deus Ex was, an incredible, nothing else had ever been like that before, to give you the choice and freedom. But even when it came out, it was blocky and chunky and kind of clunky.
Sure.
And it was an acquired taste, in the year 2000, let alone to go back to it now, it's a very challenging game to go back to.
Oh, yeah, I agree totally. And Human Revolution, which is a game I loved dearly, it held on to a lot of that, probably unintentionally, I would say. There was the positive things, but a lot of that clunkiness in terms of the how it felt to play was still there. And that's something that I think they've done a great job with mitigating in Mankind Divided.
Nice.
They've got this cover-to-cover system, movement system, where you can easily just kind of, when you're in cover, you just point the camera where you want to go next, and a little icon shows you, like a little cover icon. You just press space and it just takes care of the rest, kind of seamlessly moving you through to that next piece of cover. Yeah. You know, it's you can do takedowns from cover now. Mm-hmm. So if like you're sitting in cover and someone comes around the corner towards you, or if they're on the other side of that cover piece from you, Jensen can just very seamlessly reach over, knock them out, bring them over to this side.
Give them a smooch.
That's a theme this year. Gears 4 keeps talking about that too.
Sure. Yeah, and then like there's mantling, you know, which is seems like a thing that every game where you can traverse the environment would have, right? But actually, Human Revolution didn't have that. If you jumped up towards a ledge and you were like this far to, yeah, you know, your legs just barely wouldn't clear it by this much. Sorry, you can't jump up there.
Yeah. I wonder if anyone's ever done any research into, I feel like games, the correlation between games with cover systems and games where there's just waist high or chest high things in the environment.
Yeah. Yep.
It's very almost one-to-one.
Yeah. If there's no cover system, suddenly you don't have all that garbage all over the place.
Yeah. Mankind Divided seems like it's going to be a very cool game. I'm definitely stuck into it. Looking forward to playing more. I would say the production values and the polish are not quite up there with other stuff like Uncharted 4 or even Far Cry Primal.
Well, certainly not on console. Yeah. I'll say that.
Okay,
like,
not on console.
Like, the game is pretty good looking on console, but the ratio of how good it looks to how well it runs.
Facial animations and lip syncing is not quite.
Lip syncing is the weakest part of the production. I totally agree there. On PC, even with like an old file, like my rig at home is not at all like baller. It's like, you know, it's like 8 gigs of like DDR3 and like a GTX 770. Mm. And I run that at medium settings, which looks still better, well better than the PS4 version. And it runs almost the perfect 60. So like,
yeah, I mean, it's definitely from a gameplay perspective, as you say, you know, unimpeachable. But from a production value perspective, not probably AAA, you know, like AA. Merely an A.
Yeah. Definitely on console, I agree.
On PC, it does look gorgeous.
Stunning. Yeah, no, I mean, that was clear at E3, too. At E3, the demo was sandwiched between just, you know, gorgeous, unbelievably pretty games, and it's sort of like, well.
Brendan's been playing it on a high-powered PC over by my desk, and I felt like I could cut my eye on the textures.
It's so sharp.
I mean, it's
so
beautiful.
But only the PC version.
It would really hurt to cut your eye.
I think it would, yeah.
Slicing up eyeballs.
Anyway, Deus Ex, Mankind Divided is GameScoop approved. You should play it. Moving on September 7th, Sony is holding a meeting. They have something that they would like to share with us. We were fully expecting this to be the unveil of the PlayStation Neo.
NAC 2.
Yep. Yeah, and NAC 2.
Yeah.
Powered by PlayStation Neo. PS4 Neo, whatever it's going to be called.
NAC and boots.
But apparently also,
NAC 2, NAC and boots. But
apparently also, we should fully expect the PS4 Slim to be unveiled, because the console has been leaked out there in the wild. There's all sorts of videos and unboxing videos, unboxing videos that were put up and then taken down.
Mm-hmm. We should point out that the September event, and what I was starting to say at the top of GameScoop before I bit my tongue, was that they haven't said that that's a PS Neo event or a hardware event.
That's
when they're revealing their new console, but that's technically not a thing.
Which is not official.
Yeah,
that's what we were expecting.
It's just going to turn out to be 3 hours of Death Stranding footage.
Goodness gracious. But yeah, so to catch people up, it was actually Eurogamer that had the scoop. We should give them the credit. PS4 Slim, seemingly super real in box, just showed up on an auction website. And someone had got their hands on one. It's finished. It's real. And Eurogamer went there and checked it out. It's got physical buttons instead of the touch buttons on the PS4. It's slimmer. It's got rounded corners instead of sort of the sharp corners.
Kind of looks like a sandwich cookie. Like one of those ice cream sandwiches that you buy at the pool, but then like cut down really, really small. Yeah, like one of those, or maybe an Oreo with squared edges. Exactly. Yeah, like that kind of, but really thin.
With rounded corners. So it's, you know, it's all subjective. It still looks like a PS4. It's still got that basic parallelogram shape.
Yeah.
But it looks a little bit cheaper. And it probably is like.
We interrupt this GameScoop for a breaking news announcement. Do you guys know there's a new flavor of It's It?
What?
Shut it down.
Green tea.
Ooh.
Oh, matcha, It's It, that sounds so wonderful.
Green tea, It's It.
No. Do you think people are familiar with It's It that aren't from the San Francisco area?
I'm not familiar with It's It.
That's not a San Francisco thing.
The factory's here, we didn't have them in the Midwest.
I don't remember it in the Northeast.
I think we had them in Kansas. Yeah.
What about Choco Tacos?
Yeah, we had
chocolate tacos. I definitely had in New York.
Yeah, so delightful ice cream sandwich. If you're not familiar with it, it is the single best thing about living in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Yeah.
Hmm. I weighed 130 pounds before I moved here.
If you ever heard the hit song "Epic" by the band Faith No More, the refrain "What is it? It's it" is supposedly about It's It ice cream sandwiches.
Is that true?
Wow.
It's like an urban legend about.
It is about the mother of all ice cream.
It's really, really good.
Yeah.
The proper way to eat it is to take it out of the freezer, let it sit for maybe five minutes so it softens up a little bit, and then enjoy.
Can we just all get them? It's a fine line, Damon.
Well, yeah, you don't want to let it go too far.
If you wait too long, you'll be.
Well, then when you bite into it, all of the ice cream will spread out, and then you're left with just the cookie.
Yeah.
And
that's which looks kind of like a PS4 Mini from.
Which brings us back to the PS4 Slim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
My question is.
Mini, geez, Slim. Sorry.
You know, this console was leaked. It was on this auction site, and now all these photos and videos are up. My question is, how does that happen? How does a console go missing from Sony before they're ready to sell it?
Well, I think there are several possibilities there. Theft is certainly one possibility. Somebody takes something home and then somebody else, takes it home from the theft from the factory. Somebody taking something home and it being stolen another place. Somebody stealing a backpack. When I was listening to a podcast the other day where a games journalist was talking about how they were robbed once while carrying a prototype home. And so things like that
Well,
do
but
happen.
It's worth pointing out that this happened because that console is obviously going to be, they're going to announce it and it's going to be, and it's for sale now.
Yeah,
sort
exactly.
Of thing. Like, because
the Xbox One S is out now. Sony wants to have something to
like, you'll have, like, Xbox Ones and PS4s existed 6 months or 8 months before that console came out. They held them in their hands. Mm-hmm. They existed, but they didn't exist with a final box. Yeah. You know, in the box, in the styrofoam, you know, all there ready to sell to the public.
Right.
And that's what indicates that console is, you know, done. Like, it's completely finished and, you know, sitting on trucks or sitting
in warehouses.
They must
have been manufacturing them for at least a month now.
Yeah.
I mean, it has to be.
So it was, I mean, who knows? It's all speculation, but it was probably taken from a warehouse where it's being ready to be shipped out to retailers probably as soon as next week.
Mm-hmm. That must infuriate executives at Sony.
Well, they probably care, yes, I'm certain it does, but they probably care about that a little bit less than the Neo.
What, if it had leaked, or?
I mean, the sense that I get, you know, we'll find out in a couple weeks, but the sense that I get is that this is a PlayStation Neo event, and then, oh, by the way, also, a PS Slim is available now, and it's $100 cheaper.
I don't think they call a big press conference to say, guess what, we have a Slim.
Although it'll almost certainly happen in the reverse order. Here's, you know, 10 minutes on the Slim, and now a big event.
Well, if Neo had not leaked, I mean, if Neo's news had not leaked, or if Scorpio's news had not leaked, would they have announced the Slim of model of each of these, then waited a little while to tell us that there was more powerful hardware coming? It doesn't make a lot of sense to me that their strategy would have been, oh, let's tell them about the Slim and this better thing on the horizon at the same time.
It didn't make sense to me either. However, sales of the Xbox One are way up.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we were just wrong.
I don't know.
Maybe
well, but we also, you know, again, the expectation is that the Slim will be cheaper.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like it's a little cheaper. They almost certainly, you know, again, knocked off the digital buttons and some of the, like, the build quality seems slightly lower. I mean, it's just going to be a cheaper console. Mm-hmm. Like, the PS4 is going to be 3 years old this fall, and it's a new, you can get the expensive, fancy PS Neo, or you can get the cheaper PS4.
That's true, and not only is it cheaper to sell, and I didn't think about this, but it could very well be cheaper to manufacture. You have an opportunity to refine your manufacturing process, and that's a very good point.
And they usually do things like, not always, Jared, you just wrote a feature about this, but they do things like knock off the number of USB ports, you know, things of that nature to cut dollars and cents here.
Yeah, that was a fun feature to do. Just going through some of the history of consoles and their second and third revisions that have come out. That was really a lot of fun.
I actually want to talk about that feature in a moment.
Okay. Sure.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
I did want to say also to that point, in a way, it does actually make sense when you think about it for them to announce both, here's the new improved hardware that's coming out, and here's the cheaper version of the current hardware coming out at the same time, right? Because when you think about it, if they only announce, hey, here's the new better system coming out, then immediately what does that do, right? That puts a freeze on console sales of the regular PS4 right now, unless you at the same time announce, here's a smaller, cheaper version. So it's like, you kind of have to do that price drop and something exciting to entice people to maybe buy it in the interim time, because if you don't do that, anyone who's in the market for a PS4 is just going to go, why would I buy one right now when I can just wait and get something better?
Yeah.
But if there's a cheaper option right now and you're happy enough with what it is now, then like maybe you do end up buying it. So I think it's just a way to buffer them against freezing their own console sales while people wait for something better.
Well, that's why I still wondered if the original plan, I have no way of knowing this, was to announce the Slim release a slim, and then wait a few months and announce an upgraded version, then release that.
Maybe.
But they were forced by the leak. But who knows? That's pure speculation. They may very well have done exactly what you guys are pointing out and just said, no, it's cheaper to do it this way.
Well, the latest rumors about the Neo are that it's going to be a slightly larger than the PlayStation 4 we have now. Yeah. It's, you know, who knows? We could be all completely off base, but it's going to look, you know, similar to how the PlayStation 4 looks at basic parallelogram, but be about a half inch bigger to, you know, squeeze in everything they want to squeeze in. So that would make the comparison with the Slim a little bit more dramatic.
I'm hoping it has wheels, a chair, and a steering wheel.
Yeah. It's still, I mean, I think my understanding is it's bigger than the PS4, but smaller than the original Xbox One.
Another rumor is that the PS4 Slim comes with a new controller, or an updated version of the DualShock 4.
Six axis.
Well,
no. Okay, it travels through time. What are the other axes?
My question to you guys, I was thinking about this. If you were going to redesign the DualShock 4, would you keep the touchpad?
Absolutely.
You would.
Hands down. Without any question. So
nobody uses it. Nothing uses it.
No, absolutely. Like almost.
They use it as a button.
They use it as a button, so it's an extra. So that's the first thing. It's an extra button.
But just make it a button.
That's easily. Oh, sure, you could do that. I wouldn't.
That's what I would say.
If they did that, I would be fine with that.
It is kind of nice to have just a giant button that you can hit for your map.
That's easy to hit with either your left thumb or your right one.
We don't use its touch functionality.
I'm with Damon.
It's like tracking.
A lot of games, not a lot of games use that functionality, but some of them do into reasonable effect. It's funny, I'm having trouble remembering exactly which ones it is now.
The Witness
did. The Witness did. Also a few have
Angry Birds Star Wars did.
Oh wow, that's a hot one.
It didn't work.
It also was a way to navigate and scroll through mini maps for some games. Not a hugely important function. Also, the fact that it's capacitive comes in handy because some games actually have separate functions for the button depending on whether you press it on the upper left or the lower left or the upper right or the lower right. So
I can't think of a game I've done that in.
Yeah, there are. In fact, even Deus Ex itself, actually, if you press the left side or the right side as a button, it brings up different tabs in your
inventory. Well, I don't like that because I never ever hit it with my left thumb, always my right thumb. Mm.
Okay. I like it because it's neat, it's big, and you can press it, but also I just think it's fun. I wouldn't take it out because
it does feel good.
It feels good. I still use Denner on my passwords and stuff. I like tracing along there and pressing buttons like entering my letters.
Oh, you do that?
Yeah,
I've always
use it that way.
I've done it since.
But I think that thing is darn near the perfect controller. Other than replacing the D-pad with a Nintendo style D-pad, I would pretty much keep that controller.
Well, what do you think about the Xbox One Elite controller?
Of the two, I'd still rather use the DualShock.
Yeah, I got in a big argument Twitter about this,
really?
But I like offset sticks.
I like offset sticks too. Mm-hmm. Well, I also really like the DualShock 4.
I mean, the Wavebird is obviously the best controller ever, but
it's damn good.
If we're going in with that, I really like that controller a lot. I think it's wonderful.
I like Xbox's triggers a little more too.
See, that's actually the deciding factor for me. I like Xbox's triggers a little less. I feel like they have just a little too much yield.
Can we just say the DualShock 4 is such an improvement over the PlayStation 3's control.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In every way.
Yep.
Well, come September 7th, we will have lots more information on PS4 Neo, Slim, and I think they'll also spend some time talking about VR, because they're launching that in a month.
And Knack 2.
Yep.
And
Knack 2. Knack and Boots.
We're only half joking about that. Jared, you were talking about this article you put up this week. I think, what's the headline? 27 sexy console redesigns?
27, yeah. What it boiled down to was taking
I just want people to be able to find the article.
27, what was it? 27 sexy console redesigns, 27 sexy console makeovers, something like that.
But it was cool. I learned a few things.
Yeah, what'd you learn?
I did not know there was an updated Super Nintendo released in 1997.
Isn't that weird?
That's insane.
Yeah,
after the Nintendo 64.
I don't recommend going out and finding it because even though it looks cool, it actually feels flimsy.
Yeah, it does. It is flimsy.
Yeah, it feels like thinner plastic. You agree then?
I totally agree with you. It's a kind of a weird thing too, the updated Super Nintendo, because the reason there was the updated NES, which was a top loader, was that because the top loading was A, easier, B, like the revision of that revision of the hardware was much more reliable. But it's weird because it's like whenever I'm like, oh yeah, I have three NESs, two regular ones and a top loader, and then I'm like, I have two SNESs as well. I have the top loader and the other top loader. It's like, it kind of doesn't add any new functionality. It's just kind of a flimsier.
Actually, it strips a little out. It doesn't have an eject button.
That's right. Yeah.
And there's some other things. But yeah, it's still cool. It looks neat. I used to have.
I had no idea it even existed. Yep.
Yeah, it looks cool. There's a lot of neat little ones that were in there, and we did not, to be clear, because half the comments were, "What about this one?" We were not being comprehensive. I mean, a comprehensive article on this would have been much, much, much longer.
Well, there's some. You know, it's like there's the Game Boy Advance, and then the SP, and then the Micro, and the DS, and the DS. Like, there's some that everybody, you know, everyone sort of thinks about.
Cover every variation of the Philips CDI.
But I think, I think a lot of people forget that there was a third crazy tiny Genesis.
Yeah.
I also was going to bring that up. 3. The Genesis 3?
Yep.
I didn't know about that either.
Manufactured by Majesco.
In 1998.
But produced under license from Sega.
Nearly 10 years into that console's life.
I think a lot of people forget that they released a Wii that didn't have the GameCube controller ports.
Yep. You know, and no Wi-Fi? It had Wi-Fi taken out of it? Yeah, it had no Wi-Fi in it.
Did you know, the guys, they released a Wii U without an Ethernet port?
But there's some other ones that, you know, some that didn't make the cut. I mean, this is, it goes all the way back to Atari. The 2600 had hardware revisions that came out later.
Yeah.
You know, recasing, actually several from the Heavy Sixer. And Television 2, and I mean, there were a bunch of these weird ones. And
Odyssey 2?
There's almost no better feeling than waiting years and years to buy a console. Oh. Then you get the console for like $50, and then all the games are $10, and then you're just like, give them all to me. I mean, me really being an adult and having the job that I have, I haven't had that experience for years, but I have a vivid memory of, I got my PlayStation 1 and my Super Nintendo the same year. That's how late I was to the Super Nintendo, because I was a Genesis kid. And so that year, like, you know, Link to the Past and Final Fantasy 3 and you know, Super Punch-Out and F-Zero, and it's just like, Super Mario World, like all these games that I'd never really played, Super Metroid, which would go on to be my favorite game. Like, it's such a great feeling. The consoles get cheaper and cheaper and cheaper, and then it just opens this world.
Yeah, the library builds and builds.
It opens this world of possibility.
It's a great time to buy games. The end of a console cycle is a great time to get into a console. It really is. I've done that before, and it's wonderful because you have so much available to you. It did hurt having to leave the CDX out because that didn't really fit.
Yeah.
That's such a beautiful console, but it didn't fit the category.
Yeah, I was also, that's same. Another Genesis variation I was not aware of.
The CDX is so, so wonderful. It's dense. It feels like...
It's a Genesis and Sega CD built into one unit.
In one compact unit.
Yeah. What about the Neptune?
The Neptune wasn't ever actually released. Not that I know about. I don't think it was ever actually released. But there are, you know, a couple of reasons it was fun to do this. Thank you for asking me to do that article. It was fun. I like being able to talk about history, show some of these things off. Any opportunity I get to talk about the DS Lite for a moment makes me happy, because that's my favorite thing. And also, even though there were no... TurboGrafx in this particular article.
I was going to ask if there was a Turbo Duo on there.
There was no Duo on there. There were no PC Engine variants, even though obviously there were many of those.
Yeah.
But this was left off. But it does give me an opportunity to plug Holy Chip for a second.
There you go.
You know, if you're watching GameScoop right now, you may be subscribed to the GameScoop YouTube channel. If you're not, please subscribe.
YouTube.com/GameScoop.
That's right. There are over 22,000 people subscribed to that channel right now. And if only 8,700 of them watch our episode of Holy Chip on GameScoop Plays, then we get to make another one. So please,
One, we're playing Aeroblasters.
Aeroblasters, we're going alphabetically.
So Damon and Jared want to play every single TurboGrafx CD game.
No, it's not CD.
Turbo Chip game. Yeah. But the rule is, a video has to get 15,000 views before you can make the next video.
Yeah, that's and how you justify it.
You are just a few thousand views away from being halfway there.
Exactly. So what's next then? It would be Blazing Lasers?
No, close. This would be Airzonk.
Airzonk. Yeah,
Turbo Chip Airzonk.
You can't skip Airzonk.
It's the worst of the bonk games.
Don't tell that to Jim Riley. I think he might still be a record holder.
Well, he can call the cops.
So please, go watch Holy Chip with Jared and Damon, we'd appreciate that very much.
Okay, moving on, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com,
Did you fold that over so I couldn't actually
see that? Yes, because your wandering eyes don't try and see the 20 questions answer. This email comes from Adolf Vega, who's definitely a boss in a video game.
Yeah.
Street Fighter character, maybe?
Yep.
And... you know, this week is the 25th anniversary of the Super Nintendo, which we were just talking about. And Adolf writes in, is the Super Nintendo the best video game console ever?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you think it's no brainer?
Yes.
Well, it's close.
Or yes, is it at least the best Nintendo console?
Yes.
Go for it.
No. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, I love.
You really think it's the best console ever?
Yeah. Like, I feel like that. Like, it's so easy for me to say that. Like, with a clear conscience. Like, sure, I agree. It's close. And certainly, like, there were plenty of games to love on all consoles and all platforms all throughout history. I don't think I own a major system, and own also less than 40 games for it. So it's like every single system is great. Every single system has bangers. But I mean, like, to me, I think that when you look at people who've been playing games for any long extended amount of time, like, you know, two decades or longer, you ask them what their favorite games are, what they think the most seminal games
That's
are for, in the console space, and I will guarantee you that no less than 5 of those 10 are Super Nintendo games.
It is go ahead.
What did we name? Did we name Mario 3 the number one game of all
we
time?
We did, and that was the right choice.
No, exactly.
Me, Justin. Like, I don't even want to get back into it. All the memories are coming back.
No, but I'm with you, Justin. Like Super Mario World, man.
Yes.
Super Mario World is sublime. Mario 3 is still better.
I love 3, but
it's not better.
But the Super NES is a marvelous expression of the era of distinctive hardware. Like, there was a time when what hardware was in your box was very, very different than what hardware was in a competitor's box. And your games, which were written largely in assembly language or with custom tools, were built around the hardware's capabilities and limitations. The SNES, I think, was the perfect porridge of that. It had that extraordinary Sony sound chip in it, which produced some of the most distinctive melodies and sound effects that you'll ever remember from video games. It had beautiful graphics capabilities that were very diverse. You could do a lot with it. It had, you know, yesterday, everybody remembers the Mode 7 effects, which were a lot of fun. It added kind of a wonderful anachronism to the games, but also just the way it handled colors and sprites was really well done. And then its processor, which was very interesting because it wasn't like a blazing fast, put lots of quick action on the screen's focus so much as it was being able to handle large objects in interesting ways. And because of that, the games had this really wonderful feel that fit Nintendo's exploratory, experimental school of game design, and you just got these marvelously diverse games out of it. Refinements of 8-bit era platforming ideas, but also great RPGs and wonderful sports games and great racing games.
Okay, so let's unpack this. First, let's start with the smaller question. Is it the best Nintendo console? Is it better than the NES?
Do I get to count the DS in this or not?
I mean, sure.
Is that okay? No, the DS is the best Nintendo hardware. Mm.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what it depends on what your criteria is. Like, honestly, like a discussion maybe for another time is like, I'm not sure what criteria you're using that makes the DS Nintendo's best piece of hardware, unless it's like the most divergent or unique, which like that makes sense, I guess.
Well, I mean, best is a hyperbolic word, right?
It can mean a lot of different things. Right. I'm saying for me, it always comes down right to software. And when I think about Nintendo's major franchises, you know, which continues to be their main pillars even today. You know, the franchises they were banking on in 1991 are the same as the ones they were banking on in 2001. Were probably the same ones they're banking on in 2021.
For the most part,
you know, for the most part,
minus Pokemon and
sure, right. Pretty much every single one of those franchises, the best game ever on that franchise is on that system.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, it's the difference between what I think is the best versus what's my favorite, personally.
Yeah, sure.
The Super Nintendo is my favorite console of all time because Super Metroid's my favorite game of all time, and Super Mario World is, you know, the undoubtedly better than Mario 3.
No one would disagree.
So, separate from my personal taste, I would probably make an argument for the PlayStation 1 being the greatest console of all time, just in terms of, like, how many great, incredible, you know, iconic games came out on each console. Like, there's 100 on the PlayStation 1.
It's definitely 1. In the discussion,
just
I agree.
Just by sheer PS1 is definitely volume, in the like, I think over 1,000 PlayStation 1 games were released, and the switch to the CD medium, you know, allowed just weird, small games that would have been too expensive to ever get made and get sold, you know, get made and get sold. The game didn't need to sell, you know, 100,000 copies to break even anymore. So you had, you know, that's the very first time I ever remember, well, I guess there was Yoshi Island commercials, but Final Fantasy VII is one of the very first games I ever remember seeing, just it was on television.
A TV spot for. Yeah.
And so you had those huge products, but then weird Japanese games, you know, stuff like Vib Ribbon, and I don't know why I picked that out of a hat to name drop.
It's pretty weird. It's
this a great combination game. Of, like, weird small Japanese stuff.
Forever.
Bushido Blade.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know.
Guitaru Man.
Oh, yeah.
To me, just the depth and breadth of AAA, smaller stuff, Japanese stuff, the PS1 can't be beat. You know, JRPGs, it brought RPGs back and made them the biggest thing on Earth.
Yeah, the Super Nintendo and the PlayStation are both terrific choices for best. The reason I go with the DS is because I feel like it's the best expression of hardware-defining games in creative ways, which both those do as well. But that weird two-screen touch design and the fact that it was still very limited, the fact that you couldn't use unlimited space with a DS game. You didn't have unlimited hardware resources. And so you still had hardware design restrictions defining what your games were going to come out looking like, which was less an issue with some other platforms. That created a hotbed of weirdness very similar to what you got with the PlayStation. People just making up, it costs less to develop these games, and because of that, you got all kinds of bizarre, strange, wonderful concoctions. Yes, some of them were, you know, Mary-Kate and Ashley 7, but
some of them were Field of Magic.
Some of them were Field of Magic and Super Scribble Knots.
You got that Hotel Dusk.
And Hotel Dusk, and all those incredible Atlas games that were released on. I mean, Atlas is golden age on that thing, and, you know, so it's a wonderful thing. I think all of these are great, and I think they're all great for the same reason. They're all people who took great hardware and then said, how do we push this 17 different ways? And they all found a really good way to do it.
The Super Nintendo games definitely have more heart, and they're the games that I hope to be playing when I'm an old man. But the PS1, to me, that's the console that just changed video games.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Everything was different after that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the DS? I don't know if Nintendo does this deliberately or if it was a leak, but they did the same thing with the Wii, where the DS, they announced first, hey, we have a two-screen handheld coming out. And that was like months before the DS was revealed, and everyone's like, Nintendo's lost their minds. They've lost
it. Oh, that thing was supposed to be a disaster.
And then months later, they said, yeah, the bottom screen's a touchscreen. Then everyone went, oh. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. There was that period of 2 months of, like, the gnashing of the teeth.
And that's why I love it. It was this weird, underpowered, cartridge-fed, limited, dual-screen monstrosity. And it is, I believe, now the second best-selling piece of gaming hardware ever.
I love that there was a window of time where we knew there was a two-screen handheld coming, but we didn't know one was a touchscreen. And then, like, it's like seeing the puzzle pieces fall into place.
Mm-hmm. Jared, when you say the DS is the best... Nintendo's best hardware. Surely you mean the DS Lite.
The DS Lite is the definitive version of the DS.
Absolutely, it is. I couldn't agree more. The original DS. Yeah. I remember getting the original DS because I felt like, you know what? It's a Nintendo handheld. When have they ever gone wrong? You know, I thought to myself, so I have to get it. So I got a launch DS, and when I brought that thing out of the package, I was late to the party on the DS. I actually got the PSP first.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I got the PSP on launch day, but not a DS not until later. And I remember the first time I took the PSP out of the package, and I felt like the heavens parted and like angels began to sing. It felt like such a premium experience from the moment
I opened. The PSP felt like an impossible thing.
Exactly. Yeah, it felt like there's no way it could possibly have existed. And then I opened up the DS for the first time, and I was like, oh, I sure did spend $300 on this or whatever it was.
The PSP screen was so big and bright, and the console was so solid.
Yeah. Oh, man,
and
the first DS screen was just like...
Horrid. It was really bad. Yeah. But the Lite was a beautiful and elegant piece of hardware. And then there was the XLs and
the DSi, the XL, and the I.
And I didn't like any of those. And I still don't like, to this day, you know, that's something they continue with the 3DS, right? I still don't like the XL idea. To me, it's like portability is the key catchphrase there.
Yeah,
also, the fact that the screen, they make it larger, but it's the same resolution, so everything looks super grainy.
They got the DS Lite so right. Yeah. And then, you know, regressed for the 3DS, which is weird.
Yeah, totally. I think the XL was the idea was you were going to play it at home. That effectively it was very much like the PSP and Vita theory. That this is a console you're playing at home as much
that
as you're
That white DS Lite.
It was banging, man.
Yeah, for sure. I probably owned more copies of the DS than any other hardware. Just because I would like lose it. I left one on a plane. I left one in a taxi cab. And you buy it again and again. Mm-hmm. And I just like have all. I don't know. I probably had 10 different DS systems over the years.
For my money, right now, if you want to go buy something contemporaneous, the best like $150 you can spend on games is
Neo Geo Pocket Color.
No, well, yeah, you order one of those on. But no, go out
and
buy
investments.
Buy the Ugly as Sin 2DS for like $60 or whatever it is now, $80, and about five core 3DS games that are superb, and you're going to have 100 hours of wonderful entertainment for very little money.
Sure. Sticking with Nintendo, our next email comes from our friend in Norway. Justin, how do you think his name is pronounced?
Ovind.
Ovind? Okay.
We'll there's a little strike through the O.
I love how Dave was just like, hey, Justin, you're my friend. Why don't you fall on this sword for me?
That's fine. I don't mind.
He says, big fan of the show. Thank you for the hundreds of hours of entertainment. You're welcome.
Whoa.
His question is, with the upcoming reveal of the NX, which also could be coming next month as well as the PS Neo, I was looking back at the two latest home consoles from Nintendo standing by my TV, the Wii Bros. On the one hand, there is the older brother, the Wii, that sold incredibly well, but with the lack of HD and the, in my opinion, annoying motion controls, it ended up being one of my least favorite consoles to play on. On the other hand, there is the Wii U that hasn't managed to hit the market in nearly the same way, but that for me is a console I very much enjoy playing, and the touchscreen controller I really like to use. Of course, this is just a subjective opinion for me, but it got me thinking about a dilemma. My question to you guys is, in an alternate universe where you had to decide, would you prefer a new Nintendo console that sells extremely well, but you feel delivers mostly okay game experiences, or a small selling console that you yourself have some great gaming experiences with?
It's interesting. It's an interesting question because I think it's the question that's always being, without us realizing it, that's subconsciously always what's being batted around in the console wars. There's like this idea that I want this company that I stand for to win versus I want it to be the best for me. And it's funny because I think, and I'm going to say something slightly contentious and I don't want to piss anybody off here, but I feel like Nintendo fans more than any other kind of fan wants their team to win more than they want the best piece of hardware. And which is the only way I can explain why people defend the original Wii. Like, and go, well, look how many it sold. Look how important it was because it got into a lot. We've had this discussion
before. Get your pistols.
Yeah, exactly right.
We'll meet at dawn.
We've had this discussion. And I'm like, I don't care how many it sold. I don't care how good it is for its company. I don't care how much money it makes. What determines whether or not it's in my living room and whether I want to play it is if it's a good piece of hardware and if it runs games that I care about. Mm-hmm. And the Wii U ticks off those boxes, and the Wii didn't.
Without agreeing with Vince on the Wii being good or bad, I love the Wii. I think it's a wonderful piece of hardware with a great library. But I absolutely agree with the sentiment that ultimately, as people who love playing games, our first decision should be motivated by what's fun.
Yeah.
And I want to see companies succeed because culture, you know, when people who come to a website like IGN or watch a show like GameScoop are culturally invested in video games to some degree. But that can reach an unhealthy place. It's good for us to be fans of companies that have delivered great things to us, but we shouldn't swallow everything they hand us. For, you know, Nintendo is the company that made Super Mario and Super Mario 3 and Super Mario World and Super Mario 64 and Link to the Past and Super Metroid and all that, but they also made Wii Music.
Right.
And
lest we forget.
Don't buy Wii Music because it's not fun. Buy what's fun. Yeah. And that's what matters. Also buy Wii because it's a great piece of hardware with a wonderful library of games.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the question is buy the console, you know, would you rather be the console something that you want or something that you not want? Like, why would anybody pick the?
Sure.
Why would anybody pick anything except what they want? But the broader, you know, the bigger picture is, you know, if they make something that's not necessarily for me, but it lets them keep making games for, you know, another 100 years, like, that matters, you know. Like, I care about Zelda and Mario and Metroid, and I don't want two, you know, bum consoles in a row to make that stuff go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
I don't care. I mean, I feel like I would be happier if Nintendo didn't make consoles anymore.
Well, and, we've talked about this before.
Yeah, and there's an argument to be made that they do more to marry hardware and software. I mean, you just made that argument with the DS, and then we made that argument very convincingly that, you know, they're marrying a hardware experience and a software experience in a way that nobody else is, and that matters, but that doesn't matter to the expense of, I don't know, like, I'd be super happy to have a PlayStation 4 that had, you know, Zelda and all these other games.
I guess that's the thing that's interesting.
It'd be a super console, like a Nintendo PlayStation would be a super console.
Oh yeah, no, and it kind of almost happened, right?
Yeah.
that's almost what the PlayStation was. But in any case, like, I think you make a compelling argument, you know, both do, about hardware molding software and there being kind of this relationship, this harmonious synergy between the two of them. And that's great on paper, but I also feel like that's an entirely corporate serving mandate, right? Like, that's like a, we want to create this wackadoo piece of hardware that doesn't look like it's one of our competitors, so we don't have to play in the same pool. So in order to do that, we need to make software that makes that hardware seem necessary. Like, I'm not saying that's never created an interesting experience. It did. Like, for instance, like, even on the Wii, which I don't like, like, I loved Zack and Wiki, and I feel like that was definitely an example of that kind of an experience. Okay. At the same time, I feel like at the corporate level, most of that is we want to make something different, so now we have to make a different piece of software, and everyone, but what that also means along with that is everyone else, meaning third parties, also have to make different pieces of software. And for me, ultimately, that's bad for developers, and to me, what's bad for developers is really bad for the end user.
This is one of those things where I think very strongly both ways, taking the other side of the argument, although I think there's some validity in what you guys are talking about, I do think if you've ever read Racing the Beam, which is this book about programming the 2600, one of the things I love about that book is it shows how using the limitations of a piece of hardware, you can often be forced to make artistic and design decisions you never would have even imagined otherwise. And that ends up creating sometimes more fun games than you would have gotten had you had unlimited capabilities to design. Nintendo was really the last video game company that works under those parameters. And there's a certain sadness inside me when I think about them stepping away from that, because they do create different kinds of games out of that. And I would hate if gaming lost that part of its DNA, because it has created some marvelous, wonderful scenarios and great innovations. I'd like to see that keep happening for a while.
Without the DS, we would have never had Yoshi's Touch and Go, which is the pinnacle of human achievement.
Well, okay. No reason to be nasty.
No, I love that game.
Do you love Touch and Go?
Yeah, who doesn't?
What's the Donkey Kong game that uses the touchscreen on DS? We had to, like,
March
for
the
climbing?
Kings?
No, it's just a Donkey Kong game, wasn't it?
Oh, no. Are you thinking of the DS one? Or the GBA one that you tilted?
No.
Or Jungle Beat with the draw on?
No, it was a handheld one.
Oh, I don't know which one you're talking about.
I'll have to look it up. All right. Anyway.
Know. Canvas curse, man.
One more news piece this week. Good news for both PS4 and Xbox One players. This week, Inside is out on PS4.
That's good news for the world.
I'm saying it was previously only available on Xbox One and PC. Now it's on PS4.
Yeah.
I know Vince just played it this week.
Yeah.
That game is incredible.
My brain is still on fire with what happens in that game.
My favorite game of the year so far.
That may be the syphilis.
What's that?
Anyway, an incredible must-play experience. And then we also found out this week that The Witness... it's coming to Xbox One.
Mm-hmm. Also, something? Yeah, the timing PS4. Of it's weird that those two big high profile exclusives.
Both got 10s from IGN. They were console exclusive, now they're coming to the other side. Mm-hmm. Yep. I really like someone in the comments on IGN noted that it feels like a prisoner exchange.
Yeah.
I love it.
Two comments, yeah.
That's great.
They're just going to put them on opposite sides
like walking
of the
bridge.
They're just
going to
walk.
waiting for the Xbox One to let go of Inside. It's like, okay.
I like The Witness much more than Inside.
I like Inside much more than The Witness.
Oh, I couldn't pick between the two.
I didn't, but I think
we can
still be friends.
I thought Inside was a great game, but to me it's like a solid 8 out of 10. Like, I played it, thought it was very pretty and very fun, but it didn't stick with me the way that The Witness did. Like,
I get the sense that you feel the way about Inside the way I felt about the original Portal when it came out, when everyone was losing their mind about it. Where I thought it was great, I thought it was terrific, and I thought right as it started getting interesting, it ended, and I was like, this was interesting.
Yeah.
Two, I think is definitely a masterpiece, but I think you might feel it seems like you might feel a similar way as I did.
Yeah.
Do you know about the Portal Easter egg in Deus Ex?
Yes. Yeah. I don't know if I want to spoil
it.
Quite a few neat little Easter eggs in Deus Ex.
Oh, yeah.
You can find the cool stuff hidden in there.
Do you see the Sega one?
I saw something about it. I don't know what it is.
The Sega one's adorable.
There's a bunch of Sega games on a shelf, and it's like Knuckles and Knuckles in Knuckles.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Yep.
What happens if you snap Deus Ex onto Knuckles?
I don't know.
Ooh, maybe you get extra modes.
Get the ice key.
Now is the time on GameScoop when we play video game 20 questions. And first of all, let's acknowledge that more than one of you very helpfully reached out to me 2 weeks ago to let me know that Haze was actually not a multi-console game. It was a PS3 exclusive that had totally flip my mind. Although I do not think it would have helped
in
these guys.
In oh, was that the 20 questions?
Yeah.
A couple weeks
and they
ago?
Asked if it was an exclusive, and I said no, but it was. But they still would never would have gotten Haze.
In your defense,
I don't know. I
would never have gotten Haze. I can't speak for the other guys.
Oh, you wouldn't know? I thought you were a big Free Radicals fan.
Haze is not.
Doesn't even know what the game is.
None.
Okay.
No context for Haze.
But anyway, right.
Nobody played it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And
you're a Free Radicals guy, aren't you? Like, I thought you, like...
Time Splitters.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I thought for sure the two of you would...
No context for Haze at all. I missed Haze completely.
I'm going to start a petition for Time Splitters 2 HD remake.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
okay.
I'll sign it.
Change.org. Like
I'll sign it.
A no-brainer. However, for our pick this week, I feel confident that I have all the details right this time. And our suggestion this week comes from Chris.
In this game,
the questioning begin.
All right. In this game, does your character, either through speech bubbles and text or with audio, do they speak?
This is an interesting.
Do they?
Is this your new? I haven't watched it in a couple weeks. Is this your new startup?
I think he's just working on the new one every week.
Okay.
She was untied. I'm buying time. No, I think so.
Do you want me to pitch Holy Chips again while you look this up?
No, I'm not looking it up.
You think so?
I think so.
Okay, you think so?
I wonder if maybe we need a new rule where if Damon doesn't have the answer, we don't lose a question.
I mean, I could abstain for that one if you want to just give that a freebie.
All right.
Maybe it's Thief.
It could be. Could be Thief.
That feels like a game where I wouldn't be sure if you speak or not.
Yeah.
I actually don't. I've played that game.
Which Thief?
I don't remember.
Do you original speak in Thief?
I don't remember. I don't think you speak in the original.
This is a game that all three of us played and we can't remember.
I'm saying in the original. Okay. I'm asking you the original.
I don't think you speak in the original.
No, definitely not in the original.
Stay on target.
Stay on target.
We're going to give you a free question on that one because I cannot say with 100% confidence that you whether or not you speak.
In this, I'm sorry. In this video game, do people speak to you?
See, that's the same. It's the same question.
All right.
This is no question for a horse.
That's not true, because in Chrono Trigger you don't speak, but people speak to you the whole game.
That's true. That's a thing.
Yeah, the existence of any sort of like conversation or dialogue is something I'm not sure about.
All right. So I'm going to ask the perennial then. Was this game released after January 1st, 2000?
No.
Okay.
Can you say after or before?
I said after.
Okay.
So that means it is before.
Right.
I guess. Yeah, I guess going along with that.
It's a tough question.
I guess the easier way to do this was this a multi-platform game?
No. And I checked. Okay. It's not.
Did this game come out before January 1st, 1990?
Yes.
All right.
80s game.
Okay. 80s game.
80s game, not multi. 80s game, platform exclusive.
Castlevania 2. No, but people,
nailed it.
People clearly speak to you in that game.
In that game, they do. People speak to you in Castlevania 2.
But Castlevania 3, I don't recall.
Yes, people speak to you in Castlevania 3.
Okay.
Yeah. But not in Castlevania 1.
Mega Man.
Maybe we should aim for the platform. Do you want to try to nail it to NES? See if it's that?
I think platform we should nail down.
Yeah,
go ahead.
All right. Is this an NES game?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
All right. All right, we're well on our way. We can do developers. Genre.
I'm going to do a little bit of genre work. Is this game side-scrolling?
Yes.
Double Dragon. did Nintendo make this game?
No.
Okay. So it's a non-Nintendo.
Non-Nintendo game.
River City Ransom. Does barf count as speech?
Let's see.
Are they saying barf, or are they supposed to be barfing when they say barf?
I don't know, because
why are you obsessed with this question?
I don't remember from the Japanese version.
But like, I'm just saying it's a text bubble. You punch a guy in the stomach, and a text bubble says barf.
He does, yeah.
In your mind, were they saying barf, or were they barfing?
Yeah, in my mind, they're saying barf.
Or it's onomatopoeic. They're just saying something that sounded like barf.
Yeah.
Barf!
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
You know, there was a version of that for the TurboGrafx that never came out.
Jared, you're up.
All right, I'm up. Let's see. Do you play as a human in this game?
Yes.
Okay, you're human.
Okay.
You're human. Side scrolling takes place. We don't know if anybody talks to you or not. It's on the NES. It's not
exclusively on the NES.
And it's not. It's not Nintendo. Okay, so that means it's not arcade either. So it's not a port. That's good.
Is your primary mode of interaction, punching and or kicking, like martial, anything like that?
Melee combat.
Primary. I don't know if you'd call it primary.
I'll settle for this. Do you punch and kick enemies in this game?
I think so.
Okay, I think so. All right. It's not kung fu.
It's not quite exactly. I can think of a few. It's not Double Dragon.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not River City Ransom.
Yeah. All right. So it's not a brawler. We know that.
This game gets. Does this game have sequels?
No.
Doesn't have any sequels.
Doesn't have any sequels.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Okay. So it's a one-off on the NES.
One-off NES game.
Power Blade.
Is this game produced by a Japanese
Blaster
developer?
Master?
Yes.
Japanese developed. Okay,
I don't think he'd important. Be on... It's Japanese developed.
So it's not a Rare game. So that means right. It's not a lot of the Ultra games. It's not some of the Konami Rare games. It's... Okay.
That's 10.
All right. So it's Japanese produced, side-scrolling...
Couldn't be Blaster Master because he wouldn't be vague or unclear if you do punching and kicking stuff in that game because you don't in that game.
Right. Right. It's all
shooting.
Also, wasn't Blaster Master it like a few weeks... Like last year or something?
Yeah, I think
I think we've already done Blaster Master.
Is that true?
I'm pretty sure.
I don't remember anything.
One of the episodes I was on, I think.
Leave it all in here. All right, you're halfway done.
You could probably rotate through like five games, and it would take me months to notice.
We could start looking genre, developer. Yeah, you have an inventory?
Vince is up.
So you asked if it was a Japanese developer.
Yeah, it's a Japanese developer.
So and the answer was yes.
Yes. It is Japanese developer. You play a human. Right.
So it is a Japanese developer.
There's some side scrolling.
Was this game developed by Konami?
No.
Is this a platformer?
No. I need to be more self-assured.
Do you have an inventory in this game?
I think so. Yeah.
GoGo 13.
Could be GoGo 13. Actually, GoGo 13, you only have an inventory in the maze.
It could be...
Is that true?
Yeah.
It could be Bionic Commando.
It could be Bionic Commando. No, because Bionic Commando is an arcade port, not a platform
exclusive.
And it
got sequels.
Yep, it got sequels and shows up on other platforms. So it's not Bionic Commando.
It does show up on other platforms.
I think that the fact
people
that...
People also talk to you in Bionic Commando.
Do you play as a human? We already asked that, but
let's think about exclusives. It may could be something like Vice Project Doom, or it could be... Clash of Demon Head. It could be GoGo 13. No, GoGo 13 had a sequel, so it can't be that. Because Moffat Conspiracy was a sequel to that. It could be...
It's not a platformer.
It could be Guardian Legend. You have an inventory in that, and you play as a human that turns into a spaceship.
Right, but Guardian Legend is vert scrolling, not side scrolling.
I'm still weirded out by it being a platformer. I don't even know what that leaves us with.
Oh, it leaves us with a lot. The NES libraries are huge. It could be a shooter.
Yeah, but we know that there's some punching and kicking, so it's not like a racing game or any space shooter. Hmm. But it's not a platformer.
It's not Konami, so it's not The Adventures of Bayou Billy.
Yeah.
Man. Like I'm having trouble even picturing
there's
like what genre this is.
This. Yeah. Well, maybe that's what we need to work on.
Yeah. We do.
Who's up?
Is it
you?
Yeah. I don't know. Is this played from a top-down perspective?
No. I mean, yeah.
Okay, so it's not top-down. So that means it's not a vertical shooter. It's not an exploratory thing. It's a side-scroller.
Yeah, sorry, you did already say side-scroller. That was a mistake. That was an unforced error on my part.
No, that's okay. It's okay. It's all right. It still eliminates some things. Like, now we know for sure that it's not like a top-down adventure scroller.
Right.
Or so it's not, you know, that eliminates a lot, actually.
I was picturing that one army game where you're traveling up.
Ikari Warriors.
Ikari Warriors.
Yeah.
I was picturing something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe categorized as side-scrolling, even though.
What about things like, I know, Fasanadu, people talk to you, definitely.
Yeah, they definitely do. God, I love Fasanadu.
Gosh, there's so many NES games.
To narrow it down in that direction.
Well, maybe we
you're
do,
up.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
Up. You're
oh,
up.
Is it me?
Yes.
Are we on me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
What about enemies? Could that help us, or...
Hone in on something like Fasanadu.
Do you think eliminating another major developer might help?
No, that's a trap.
No.
It's a trap.
Is a developer still in business?
Yes.
I don't like to narrow it down further than that.
That's 15.
Otherwise, you get sucked into...
Five questions
Hone
left.
In on something like Vexanadu. I like that.
Like, just what... Like, what do you got in mind for honing?
I don't know.
Well, we asked about an inventory... Does this game contain significant RPG elements?
No.
Okay, well, that takes out all the side-scrolling adventure games like Battle of Olympus.
That's a good question.
Fasanadu. Wow. Okay, there's still so many this could be.
We have four questions left.
Yeah, we're getting narrow.
Do you think it would be helpful to know if it's licensed?
Could be.
I was thinking about that, but I feel like most of the licensed games we could either eliminate or narrow down into with all the other questions we have answered already if we actually thought about it. Like, what are some of the licensed games you would have thought of? Like Gremlins 2, until we eliminated top down.
But you play as a human, and in Gremlins 2 you play as Gizmo.
That's right, that's another reason you could have eliminated it, yeah.
Wow, so this is...
Skate or Die?
Or Die.
Skate or Die has top-down vertical scrolling
sections, top-down sections in that.
Yeah, he said that's not in there.
Yeah, okay.
So it can't be TNC Surf Design because you play as a human.
Right, you gotta say something like that, like Paperboy?
It's not Clash and Demonhead.
Paperboy's isometric.
RPG elements.
Yeah. Paperboy's not side-scrolling. I'm just trying to think of something that's like not that doesn't fit into like an easy genre box.
Right.
There's a lot of that.
I was thinking of maybe asking about if there's any shooting.
Yoshi's Cookies.
Guess what shooting? That would.
Sure. Can you shoot in this game?
Like a gun?
Do you have projectile weapons?
Yes.
Probably should ask that about 10 questions ago.
It's still in business, so it's not 10.
So it's probably a game.
It's not Tengen, so it's not Skulls and Crossbones.
It's probably a game where you're mostly shooting, but maybe occasionally punching or kicking.
I'm gonna go back again and
what's
say.
What's the one that's like Bad Dudes, but mostly shooting that in the arcade was played on three screens? Was played on one really big wide screen?
Wait, Ninja. You're thinking of Ninja Warriors?
Ninja Combat? That's a Neo Geo game.
Yeah,
there was one like that on the NES where you're going. I can barely remember. It's ninjas and you're going in and out of doors.
Oh, are you thinking?
And you're shooting a gun. And there's three levels.
Rolling Thunder. Yeah. It has sequels.
Yeah. I was thinking of Rolling Thunder.
I was thinking of Rolling Thunder earlier too, but it has sequels.
Rolling Thunder and Shinobi both have sequels. Both were on NES, but both have sequels.
Yeah. What about?
And that was.
But what is it? Is it Black Manta or Legend of the?
Oh, Wrath of the Black Manta.
Wrath of the Black Manta. That doesn't.
I would normally say Damon would never pick a game like that, but
Wrath of the Black Manta has some melee. You could also throw shurikens.
Yeah.
You are a human. It's side scrolling. It's. Tengen?
Wrath of the Black Manta was Tengen. I remember who it was, but it wasn't Tengen.
Was it a Japanese company?
Almost positive.
Keep it together.
I want to go out on a limb. We got three questions left.
Yeah.
I want to find out if there's any sort of ninja flavor.
I'm okay with this.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah, there are a lot of ninjas.
Yo, this game got ninjas?
No.
Okay, so all the Ninja Gaidens, Wrath of the Black Manta.
Two questions left.
All right.
We're in trouble.
We're in real trouble here. Let me ask you guys a question real quick. I need someone to bounce this off of. Can we rule Power Blade out?
No, Power Blade could be this. That actually fits really well.
Like, it doesn't have a sequel. I can't remember who developed it, though.
I don't remember who did Power Blade either.
Nobody knows.
But Power Blade has a sequel. Isn't there Power Blade 2?
It does?
I'm almost positive it's Power Blade 2. I could be wrong. Now I'm doubting myself.
The developer is still in business. I feel like that was a big ish clue. How many of these companies are still around? That means it almost
Capcom, Konami.
Yeah, Japanese
made
that. And
we've ruled out Konami, right?
That leaves really just Capcom.
Well, Tecmo. Tecmo, Namco eventually produced for the NES.
We did kind of gloss over that clue. We know it's an NES exclusive made by a Japanese company that's still in business that's not Nintendo.
So let's go with the biggest one. That would be Capcom, right? What are some Capcom
Ghosts
games?
Ghosts and Goblins. We got many sequels.
But it had many sequels, right?
And it's not a platformer, but you shoot things made by Capcom.
Okay, so this is, I guess he would have thought a little bit about whether or not there's a sequel, but I mean, like, there was a Street Fighter game, Street Fighter 20XX on...
Yeah, there was. Street Fighter 20XX.
Doesn't have a sequel.
Oh, what about this? No, Strider. This Strider has Strider 2.
Strider has a sequel.
Okay.
And was an arcade port.
And
it's got ninjas.
Yeah, and it's got ninjas. You're right. That's off. There's some janky... Ghost Goblins has sequels. Goodness gracious.
This is a tough one.
Great one, actually. I wonder if this is like the most obvious thing in the world. Goodness gracious. You shoot projectiles, side scrolling, you may or may not talk to people.
Metal Storm?
Metal Storm, you're not a human. You're a.
Is that true?
You're a robot, aren't you?
You could be a human inside a robot.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with the lore.
You're humanoid.
Power Blade is interesting.
Batman or RoboCop.
Oh yeah, RoboCop. But RoboCop's
Data East.
Yeah, and it was multi-platform.
I wish I would have asked if it was a licensed
RoboCop's multi-platform.
Now it's too late.
Well, is it too late?
How many questions? Have two questions.
Most licensed games were multi-platform, though.
Yeah. Well, so. Or just on the NES. I mean,
that's true. There were. Yeah.
It's kind of the only game in town.
That's true.
Where does DuckTales fall?
You don't play as a human in DuckTales.
But it's like but it's an anamorphic animal, right?
It's anthropomorphic. I wasn't trying to be.
Hey, you're technically a duck in that game.
All right, two questions left. Let's bring it home.
All right, do you want to try the license thing?
Is this a licensed game?
Yes. Oh! So much time wasted.
Crap!
It is a licensed game.
Oh my god.
Not Power Blade. Nukes Power Blade Metal Storm.
Can you bring out the Hail Mary with your last question?
A licensed game for NES. There were a lot of those.
On the NES where you are a human.
Back to the Future.
Japanese
part two and
produced.
Three?
No, there are sequels to
that. Japanese developer, there's side scrolling.
Sort of, but not really. There's more Back to the Future games. They're not sequels. They're just more games.
Well, they say two and three in them. I think Damon would have at least
gone. But that's one game. I think you would have been. That's one game. That's one cart. Back to the Future Part 2 and 3 is one game.
Yeah, but isn't there a Back to...
That's right. The question was not, is this part of a series? The question was, is this a sequel? Does
but there is sequels? A Back to the Future 3 on Genesis. I feel like he'd have walked that back a little bit.
That's true.
Okay. I feel like, but I want to point out that it's possible our reading of the does this game have sequels question might be screwing us up here, because just because a game does not have a sequel does not mean it's not
it
part
also
of the
just
series.
Fits. I'm not saying it's that, yeah. Okay? But not clearly a platformer, but is 2D side-scrolling.
True.
Not completely sure if you punch and kick in that game, but you do have projectiles.
But isn't that a sequel to Back to the Future for NES, which is a top-down platformer?
I would call them both licensed games. I wouldn't call them sequels.
And it could be, and to be clear, again, just to double down on this, it sounds like if you read, the way we should read this is the game itself could be a sequel, it just doesn't have any sequels.
See
what I'm saying? We didn't ask, is it a series of games?
I see the point. I still feel like there's something out there.
Was there like a Predator Alien game on the NES? I'm trying to think of other big properties that came out. It's not Ninja Turtles, because that was Konami.
Right, was Konami. There are a lot of NES licensed games.
Was Activision making licensed stuff on the... Oh, but it's Japanese made.
And that's the other bet that's really...
So RoboCop... Why can't it be RoboCop?
Because RoboCop's multi-platform. It was all over the place.
Well, that's right.
RoboCop's multi-platform.
But even in the 80s?
Even in the 80s, yeah. It was ported to several different... you could play it on the color computer.
Ooh, was there some... No, because it would probably just be kind of a port of the arcade version. But I was just going to say, what about Superman?
Oh, there was. I mean, there is a.
And you did punch and kick in that.
You do punch and kick and shoot.
But that was.
And you had
the eye lasers. But that was was there a port of the on the NES of the arcade version? Is that what that was?
No, Superman for NES is its own kind of thing. I think.
I give up.
Wait, on those grounds, what about Batman? What about Batman though?
Batman had a sequel, Return of the Joker.
Oh right.
We've reached the end of our journey.
Oh no!
I feel like we would get this within our time.
We have one more question though, right?
It's not called 100 questions.
Right, we do have one more question.
You have to guess the
game.
Can't
be Roger Rabbit because that's got top down.
Oh, the game has to be the last.
Yeah,
the game has to be the last.
You only have 20 questions total.
This is it.
No RPG elements, licensed game. I don't know, 80s toys.
I want to tell you guys.
No.
What's been your last question,
Justin? What's your best guess?
Mine would be Back to the Future.
What's your best guess?
I don't think it's that.
Let's go with your guess.
What about you? Do you have one?
I don't have one now. I got to think for a couple more minutes.
Neither.
I'll have one.
Wait a minute. What about the Bart Simpsons versus the Space Mutants?
That was on Genesis.
It had sequels. And it was on NES, but it had sequels.
It had sequels?
Yeah, it had sequels. Also produced, it was developed by David Crane in America.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
I also don't know who made Back to the Future. That was probably made in America, too.
I think LJN licensed it, and I think it might have been developed by Atlas, but it may have been made in Australia.
We give up.
All right.
What is it?
We submit.
You were just dancing around it just now. Yeah. Fingers crossed I haven't misled anyone. Friday the 13th.
Yep, perfect.
Developed by Atlas, published by LJN.
Yeah, JN. Yep, perfect. Yep.
So, is there any dialogue in that game?
There is.
I couldn't remember if there's actually any. If anyone talks to you, if you say anything.
You go into the cabins.
There's multiple.
And you get, but however,
teenagers.
You do have an inventory system, and there are RPG elements, and that's.
Well, hold on. I said there is an inventory system.
Yeah, but there are also RPG elements in that game.
You said, would you say there are significant RPG elements?
I mean, there's a map screen. There's experience RPG. Upgrades. You fight the same.
Is it just me?
I'm trying to remember.
I think Damon's on safe ground. I'm also trying to remember
what the, because I didn't really play the game that much, but like, my memory of Friday the 13th.
That's a great one.
Is it kind of being almost Shadowgate-esque from a first person perspective?
Not a point.
No, it has.
Well, so
you play from the side screen, right.
and then
you
go into
the building,
cabin,
and
then if the camera's
that's what
behind
I'm remembering.
You.
Okay, that's what I'm remembering.
Yep, and then
they were projectile weapons in that game?
Lots of them.
You throw rocks, knives. Yeah,
right, but I couldn't remember if you actually punch anything.
As far as I remember, yes, you play punch out with Jason, but you just throw knives at him and throw rocks.
Yeah.
You never actually have a melee attack in that game.
I thought you melee attack from the 2D view.
No, you actually throw things even
there.
You're
throwing rocks at the zombies and wolves.
Yeah, and you throw rocks from the 2D view, but it's still, I think Damon's on good ground here.
You got it. Oh, yeah, I think so too.
I can't believe I got Chris to LJN and didn't get to Friday the 13th.
Yeah, developed by Atlas, because you were talking about Atlas earlier on the show.
Yeah. That's really, really depressing that I didn't go there.
Wow. So I want to say, this is actually...
I think I've lost a lot of these.
It's a very well-known NES game that we talk about quite a lot.
Yeah, it's a terrible game, but
it's a very
memorable.
Bad game, yeah.
But it's very memorable, and it was unique, and it was... That's
I should ask if it was
bravo.
A good game. If we would have found out it was a bad game,
that's a good question.
There.
That's a good question just in general. Like, is this a bad game? Is this a bad game?
Oh, yeah. There's lots of. I was talking about this on the way into work this morning in the car with people I carpool with. There's lots of like terrible games that are terrible that I loved when I was younger.
Yeah.
The first time I ever played that game was at my elementary school's spring fling. They had brought a Nintendo and a TV and set it up.
And they brought that?
And you could pay to play. And it was just some kid's like video game collection he brought. And we just all played Friday the 13th because he had that. And there were all these other games, but all we wanted to play was Friday the 13th because we were, you know, in third grade or something, and it was great. It was a bad game, but somehow the parents didn't seem to have a problem with this. So, yay.
Better luck next time.
Man, I...
Friday the 13th, everybody. That's all the scoops we have for this week. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. If you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel yet, please do that, youtube.com/gamescoop. In addition to the full episodes, we also post various Let's Plays and other fun videos over there. So.
Holy chip.
Holy chip, also. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Vince. My name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. We're out. Down to me.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.